Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, welcome to Going Off Track. My name is Jonah.
My name is Brad.
And together, we are Logie. You're Logie?
That's a word for tired.
Oh, I am pretty tired. I'm maybe going to drink some coffee. Although I feel like if I drink coffee, it's like 6 o'clock here. If I drink coffee, I might be up all night.
You know, it's funny. So it's 6 o'clock. I mean, it's funny that like, you know, we're sitting here talking about how we both feel kind of like a little relaxed, I guess, or plain tired. But it must be really obvious to our listeners who are usually hear us at 11 in the morning when we're jazzed on Stumptown coffee.
Well, let me
which is very strong.
It's coffee. A different vibe. Well, let me take you through my day. Wake up 8 o'clock. Didn't really do anything last night. Wake up at 8. Take this hot yoga class at 9, Moto Yoga. Then I went home, and on my way home, my friend Christina texted me and said, my mover cut his hand open on the van.
Ouch.
And he had to go to the ER, and she was moving to my neighborhood, and she was like, and I have a van with my bed and all my stuff in it parked on the street that I've rented, and I can't carry anything in by myself. My mover's gone. Can you help me? And I was like, yes, I can. I'm almost home. So I rode my bike over there. It took like 4 minutes. It was so close. And so I spent like a half hour helping her move stuff. And I was like, you could just ask me to help you move. So I helped her move. And then I went home and I meditated. And then I made a smoothie and did some work. And then I came here. So I feel like I've done a lot of stuff.
Yeah, dude. You've had a full day.
I've had a full day and it's only 6 o'clock. So,
and you've exerted yourself physically in two separate instances.
I've done a lot of physical exertion. I didn't think the moving thing was going to be that bad. And it wasn't. But it was a lot of stuff like this couch parts. It was a lot of stuff that wasn't heavy, but very awkward.
Oh, yeah. That's the worst.
Positioning. So I was like, oh, this isn't so bad. It's not so heavy. And then, like, we stopped and I was like, my shirt is just drenched in sweat. How did this happen?
No, move. Yeah. And it was a hot day.
Yeah.
But moving. Yeah. It's not the weight, dude. It's like trying to move furniture and stuff like around stairs. Ugh, it's impossible.
You know what I like about it, though? And this is just one of my weird, this really makes me sound like a dick. But I like I like helping people move, A, because it's like, it's helpful and it's like a good thing to do as a friend. I feel like it's good karma. But also there's something really satisfying about moving stuff in and then being like, all right, well, I'm not moving. So like, I'm done with this whole process for
me. You mean when you leave with a living room full of boxes and crap all over the place?
Yeah, like I don't have to unpack this stuff. I don't have to hang stuff, which I don't because I still haven't hung anything in my apartment. Yeah. I've been there for 2 years. But yeah, it's kind of nice.
The worst part.
It kind of reminds you how much moving sucks and the fact that like you're not doing it.
Yeah. It does suck.
I've
done it a lot in this town.
I have too.
It's been difficult every time.
I'm honestly, man, my thing now, what I'm trying to do is like get rid of anything I don't need and keep stuff clean. Cause I feel like every time I move, I have so much extra shit I have to move. And I'm like, and everything's like, my fridge is dirty. I got to clean all. I got to spend 2 weeks clean. I'm like, I just want everything to be like organized and clean, so when I have to move, it's gonna be like, all right, I'm gonna do this.
It's a good practice.
Yeah, it's hard.
Routine maintenance will always
routine pay maintenance off. Is huge, and that's something that has taken me a very long time to learn.
I don't know if I mentioned this once before, but I had a friend named Billy, quite a character, who moved quite often. He moved here to New York about the same time I did, and we're the same age, and so similar stories. He's moving like every year or two. But Billy would, like, when it came time to move, he'd come home with a bottle of Wild Turkey, and he would pack a small duffel bag while drinking the Wild Turkey, and then he would carry everything else that he owned out into the street or the backyard, whatever was convenient, and burn it.
Wow. I don't know if you could get away with that now.
It might be tough. In certain parts of Brooklyn, you could.
Yeah.
And then he would walk off with his duffel bag, and that was it. He was done. He was kind of a nut.
Yeah.
In a good way. Fun nut.
I'm kind of jealous. It sounds actually kind of fun.
It's like a purging, you know? It's like, yeah, the burning is better than there's just throwing
so much,
it all out.
Yeah, there's so much stuff I feel like I have that I don't need. I just have this box in my room of, like, tax statements from, like, 2001, where it's, like, receipts and stuff.
Dude, the worst is, you know, like, I have a storage space now that's in my building, but I pay for it. It's extra. And it's not as much as, you know, when I was at, like, Manhattan Mini Storage.
Right.
But I remember going over there at one point and just being, like, doing the math in my head. And, like, essentially, there's not a lot of stuff that you own if you live in New York that's worth putting into storage. Because
right,
after it being in there for a year, it's literally like, I can't remember it now, but I did the math where, like, you know, like a vase, say, that was like a cubic square foot is going to end up costing like $500, you know, to store it for a couple of years. Like, is that fucking worth it?
No. Right. Yeah.
You don't do the math. It's depressing.
Yeah. I like not having stuff.
It's very zen. You can get away with it.
It is.
But here in America, we got stuff.
We do. And books is the one I struggle with. And I rarely keep books.
And they're hard to move.
They're hard to move. But I will say, there's a cookbook that I got that I'm keeping. And it was written by today's guest on Going Off Track. It was written by Tyler Cord. It's called A Super Upsetting Cookbook About Sandwiches. And I haven't actually made anything out of it yet, but I've had many of Tyler's sandwiches, and they're amazing. Tyler,
they're so amazing that you had to get him on the show and talk about it.
I did. Well, me and Tyler, we'll talk about all this stuff. And me and Tyler's emo bands played together in college like 15 years ago, and we kind of reconnected out here at his restaurant, Number 7 Sub in Fort Greene. And since then, he opened a Number 7 Sub in the Ace Hotel. They've one in Dubmo. They have something in the Plaza. They have a restaurant in Greenpoint, and they just opened a Number 7 Veggie in the Whole Foods on Bedford.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's great. It's all vegetarian sandwiches, and like they have fries, Brussels sprouts. It's a pretty small menu, but everything on it I've had is really good, and Tyler's there a lot. But yeah, he came on here because he's promoting this cookbook, which is like a real legit cookbook, and it's written in a super... It's really funny. It's really educational. It's got drawings by illustrations by a fella named Eggleston, who's a very famous illustrator. He's known, I guess, for his dogs. What's his name? William Eggleston? What is it, Brad? I think. This is something I should have looked up before.
William Wegman.
William Wegman.
Oh, Wegman, yeah.
William Wegman.
Really?
Why did I say Eggleston? That's Wegman's a guy who did...
He's a famous artist.
Yeah, famous artist. Yeah, Tyler... Yeah,
he did the hounds. What do you call
Yes, he did the hounds. If you want to find out how...
Particular kind of hound. I can't think of it now.
How Tyler got him. Guess what? It's something we talk about on this podcast. So I'm going to just let you listen to this
podcast.
You're
going to release the hounds?
I'm going to release the hounds. With this podcast with Chef Tyler Cord on Going Off Track.
It's going off track!
But have you been watching the Republican National Convention?
No, I won't.
Yeah,
because
it
can't.
Feels like it is happening.
Yeah, I can't. It's like one of the few things that's happened politically in my lifetime, honestly, that I know exactly what's playing out there. And I can't watch it.
I don't understand.
Like, I literally can't subject myself to it anymore.
My wife keeps watching it. And I had a moment the other night where I almost lost my mind, like, watching it.
What was the tipping point?
It wasn't even
Giuliani.
No, I didn't see Giuliani. I think it was just Chris Christie.
Oh, another being piece
horribly
of work.
Chris Christie. I made it, but it was like, I don't know. I had a bunch of moments. I had to walk outside, take a break.
Just need, like, it drove you to needing air.
But then she was like, do you want to change the channel? And I was like, but Donald Trump's going to come on in 20 minutes. And I kind of, like, that feels like the one part of it that we should be watching. But it was just all the, like, his kids and the dude who started the UFC and...
Oh, yeah. Another piece of work.
I don't know. It was just, it feels like an entire half of this country that truly has zero empathy for other people. And so they're just, it's just...
Yeah.
It feels so, they're all so selfish and horrible.
Maybe I'm just missing it. Did they always have their, like, families up there and stuff? I felt like Bill Burr had, like, the best bit that someone posted where it was, like, him talking about the first lady. I didn't vote for the first lady. A plumber to fix something and says, it's this. And then, like, the plumber's wife comes in. It's like, well, actually, I think. He's like, hey, who the fuck asked you?
I heard
a plumber. And he's like, is this going to be the same thing with a female president? It's like, her husband chimed in. It's like, yeah, I don't care what you have to say. I didn't vote for you.
I think they're there to humanize. And, like, I think that always happens. But with this one particularly, they're like, how do we make Donald Trump look like...
likeable?
He's not this horrible, horrible dude that he so clearly is.
Right.
His family's there, but they don't make him. I don't know. The whole thing is pretty upsetting.
Yeah.
But that's where I feel like beyond the family with that stuff, I mean, this is everyone's opportunity to cash in, family included.
Oh, sure. There's already speculation that, like, Trump Jr. is about to start. This is like him launching himself into politics.
These are ops for the family.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Like, they're all like, into their own shit, and this is the most press they will ever get. So they will say whatever the fuck they have to say to get on that stage and to be a part of it.
Right.
That's where who can even fault them for that? Like, this is their, like, are they going to be the one kid who's like, no, I don't really like my dad, and then they're probably in, like, a gulag, black bagged or something within a couple months, and they were like, oh, he was crazy, he killed himself, you know, because that's probably what would happen at this point. I don't think Trump would let I think he would eat one of his children before this stopped.
Well, speaking of eating, today on the podcast, we have...
Are we recording this? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Now we're rolling.
A Trump child to me is like is like some sort of really, like, tacky, overpriced, like, foie gras sandwich, but one that's, like, been plastic wrapped and left in, like, a cooler for 3 days. But they're still charging, like, $20 for it.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
I mean, I think that's not how they're trying to present themselves. I think they're trying to present themselves as, like, yeah, like the most badass foie gras that doesn't take shit from anybody, but it's on, like, not fancy. It's on, like, an English muffin.
Yeah.
Like, not like a really, not like a, not like a bespoke English muffin. Like, it's on a Thomas's English muffin and go fuck yourself. That's what we're eating.
Is the best foie gras.
Being said, like, how?
Because they keep positioning themselves as, like, they keep talking about how, like, our dad raised us taught us to use a shovel, and, like, yes we were building these mansions and skyscrapers, but, like, we were there learning how to pour concrete and stuff. That's the angle that they're taking. Not only are we awesome, but it's because our dad gets it, and he's not elitist, and he's not, like,
okay
he doesn't care. He doesn't care what that, you know, $1 million an hour architect says. He wants to talk to the dude that is, you know, doing all the drywall.
Well, that's where I was confused, because I'm like, so how does someone whose attempt is to publicize themselves as the most untouchable foie gras there is, but you're selling yourself to the bologna crowd?
Sure.
So
it's all about the bread, I think.
I see.
How important is bread when it comes to a sandwich?
It's not really a sandwich without it.
Right.
So in that sense, it's absolutely crucial. I love bread. I guess I don't over fetishize the bread that I use for my sandwiches, though. Like, there's a difference between the bread that I want to just maybe put some butter and a piece of ham on and just and just eat it really simply versus the bread that, like, you know, with a really complex, awesome sourdough situation, like, that's great, and I love to eat that, but that's not, I'm not looking for anything that complex on a sandwich. So I would say that the bread is still super important, but it's important that it not get in the way of the sandwich itself, which is the sum total of all of the things, you know?
So that being said, in the idea of sandwich building, is the bread more of a conduit for taste or for
texture?
I think it's both of those things, and I think it's also just the convenience of being able to pick the thing up in your hands and eat it, right?
Well, yeah works for
me. That's
a
good point. I want to back up before we get too into the sandwich. I'm sure we'll talk about the intro. Tyler just wrote this book, a super upsetting cookbook about sandwiches.
I did that.
Tyler Gord, chef, number 7 sub, artwork by William Wegman. We'll get into all that. But me and Tyler met when our bands played together in college, like 15 years ago.
Yeah. Tyler it was longer than that.
Longer, man. I guess. Well, I graduated college in 2002.
I graduated in 2000, so it had to have been before 2000.
Before 2000, yeah.
It was in the late 90s.
Because I was probably in that band when I was like a freshman, sophomore.
Which bands were these, fellas?
Tyler was in a band called Scenes from the Next. Well, you guys were based in Oberlin, where you're going to school.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in this band called Mumra.
Mumra.
And I was in Ithaca College, and our...
And Oberlin is close to Ithaca?
Not really. But our singer, Brent, was from Ithaca, and Tyler...
I'm from Ithaca,
And
yeah.
Tyler's from Ithaca, so I was in this band, and we went to Oberlin. We went to a party at your house.
Yeah.
Because Brent was also in this band called Somebody Loses an Eye, who played there, and yeah, our band, and then we played some shows together.
Yeah. I think so. That's so long ago.
It was, yeah, I guess it was in 2000. And then I didn't see Tyler for years. And then I had some friends who worked at Number 7 restaurant in Fort Greene. And I was there one day. I think it was like Brendan or Skirty, someone. And they were we got introduced, me and Tyler. And I was like, you look so familiar. He was like, you look familiar. I was like, yeah. I was like, were you in Scenes from the Next? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, that's so crazy. And so many people that work at this restaurant. He's like, it's my restaurant. I'm the chef. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then Tyler opened like 40 more restaurants.
45 at this point.
45 at this point. But yeah, and me and Tyler.
But no one's ever been like, were you in Scenes from the, you know, like my like college stupid band? No one's ever said that to me before.
Yeah. And my,
were you
also
in that band?
Also, no one's ever said that to me about Mumra, my college stupid band. But yeah, to me, that's...
Mumra was great. Where are those guys?
Who knows?
Those Antal brothers.
Who knows? They actually came when United Nations played in Seattle. They came.
Oh, good.
Brent and Chris.
Do they live there?
I think so. Yeah. But yeah. To me, like when that kind of stuff happens, it's so crazy because it's like, who would have ever thought?
Yeah.
Were you into cooking and stuff at that point in your life, or was is that something that came after college?
No, I always liked cooking. I didn't cook a ton in that house because it was like, that house was kind of like the set of Jackass a lot of the time. And it was, I think if I had tried to cook anything, somebody would have put something upsetting into the food.
Yeah.
So I didn't cook a lot there, but like when I was home on breaks, I would always cook with my mom, and yeah, I always really liked it. I didn't think that it was necessarily going to be a career at that point, but I loved doing it.
So what did you, you grew up in Ithaca, mm-hmm. went to school in Oberlin, and then what did you do? You went back to Ithaca or you came to New York?
No, I moved straight here and I tried to work. I wanted to write, and I tried to work in publishing, and I like kind of did that for a few years where I kept getting, it was 2000, I kept getting these jobs that were like the like web part of publications. Like I worked I interned at the Village Voice for a while, but then I got a job for their website for a little while, but got laid off because it was just like the time when websites were all going away, but I for some reason kept getting these jobs, even though I knew nothing about web design or any of that stuff. But anyway, so I kept taking these like editing jobs on websites and getting laid off. And then I wanted to write, I realized in all this that I think that I really wanted to write about food, but I couldn't get anyone to give me a job. So I thought if I went to culinary school and had a literature degree and a certificate of culinary excellence, or whatever they call that, that then I would be a shoo-in that they would have to hire me. So I did all that, and then I just got so into cooking that I didn't try to write.
What was that like for you, trying to like go back to school and kind of restart another career like while living in New York? That sounds like it could be difficult. How are you able to like sustain yourself? What's that?
There were loans.
Couple loans.
And I worked while I was in school, but school itself was really fun because while college was tough and I never felt like I was quite smart enough for it in a lot of ways. And culinary school was like, my homework is to like chop that onion a bunch. Like I can totally, like I was really good at it. So it was really fun. Aside from the like incredibly long hours of working and going to school and I still have not paid off those loans, but I will.
Eventually.
So your first restaurant was Number 7 in Fort Greene.
Uh-huh.
And how did that come about? Because to me, like, I just can't imagine the, like, not only the financial strain, but like the logistics of like opening a place, getting people to come, like hiring people. I mean, how did...
A huge undertaking.
Yeah. How did that come together? I mean, like, how do you even do something like that?
Well, it was I had been cooking for like 8 years or so, and it was time for me to take kind of the next step, which was be a chef for like for the guy that I was already working for, or to go off and try to do it on my own. And I didn't really know how to do that. But I knew that I kind of, that sounded more fun. But I had this buddy who actually, a guy that I went to college with, his name's Matthew Maddie. And he and I hadn't talked to him in a long time, but he had been building bars and restaurants the whole time that I had been working in them. And so I called him and I was like, hey, can you explain to me how one opens a restaurant? And so I made this big dinner. He came over and he was like, you know what? I'll do it with you. Let's just do it. So he knew how to do it. So we, neither of us had any money, but we,
he knew people that had money.
He knew some people like that knew some people, and there throughout my career, there's always been these, people that are like, oh, when you're ready, you know, like say the word and me and my friends, and those people all disappear in the end, it turns out. But, but we like scraped together enough money from people to put down a deposit for the space and to kind of get started. And so then once we had this space where the restaurant, where Number 7 is now, we were able to like, I lived right down the street. So we'd have people over to my apartment. I'd cook like a 12 course dinner throughout which we'd get them hammered drunk. And then we'd like walk them over to the space and be like, the bar is going to be here and the tables are here. And like, you're going to look so cool standing right here. It took a long time, but we would get a little chunk of money and we'd do some work and then we'd have to stop for a couple of weeks and then we'd get somebody else to give us some money and we'd keep going. And
then you would manipulate your friends with food and wine.
Yeah, exactly.
And get some more. And it's genius.
And so eventually we opened the restaurant it's basically you say like, I own 100% of this restaurant that doesn't exist and it's going to cost X to build it. And I'll sell you, you know, 50% of the company for that money, and then it'll be open, and then we'll all get paid back, presumably. But then it turns out it's New York City, and it's not that simple because it's really expensive and difficult to do things here. But anyway, that's
when you do those deals. Is there a time frame when you have to pay people back, and like at what kind of like interest do you have to pay these people
back?
Sure,
but that's all contractual, right? Like you could just say, it could literally be, if you were that good, it could be as simple as saying, I own 100% of this business. I will sell you about half of it for, you know, the $200,000 I need to open this, you know, this thing. And it's just, then it's just negotiation. They could say, well, no, I'm only going to give you $100,000 and I want the same amount. And I want this kind of interest if you don't, it's just a contract.
Or they could say like, I'll give you even more cash, but you give me an ownership stake, like 60% or like,
sure.
Like just,
it's a negotiation, right?
Yeah,
you're selling part of something that doesn't exist, but you're selling it.
Little Shark Tanky.
So you sell it for you can sell it for what you want, but they don't have to buy it. You know, they can argue about the rate or whatever. But
okay,
yeah.
I think I fundamentally learned all these concepts from Mark Cuban.
Yeah,
on TV. Yeah,
he's good. He knows his stuff.
He does. Smart guy. He's like the ultimate dream to me.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Why's
guy,
that?
Well, because he was like a dude who like grew up going to like Dallas Mavericks games and then like made just a, you know, stupid amount of money and then bought his favorite basketball team. You know what I mean? Like, that's just great.
Yeah.
Me. That's like the ultimate, like, cool story.
Yeah,
I mean, I could never imagine myself making nearly enough money to buy the New Jersey, or I even said the New Jersey Nets, been the Brooklyn Nets for a long time. But if I could, I would. Yeah. I know it's a non sequitur for what we're talking about.
No. I think it's interesting. I'm just trying to think of, like, I feel like it would be cooler to buy the New Jersey Nets, but then, like, give them to, I don't know. I have to think about this.
Like,
I feel like there is, yes, this is my childhood team and I bought this team, but there's something beyond that, you know?
Oh, I mean, if I was rich enough to buy the Brooklyn Nets and relocate them back to New Jersey, being the hero of New Jersey.
Yeah.
I mean, that, like, I could get a statue.
Yeah,
for me.
I wouldn't be thrilled because we're right down the street from there. And that stadium does not hurt business.
Yeah, that's true.
You just have to find us a different team, I guess.
You know what? I'm glad we're doing this interview. I'm a Nets season ticket holder. I often find myself up that way.
We're right down the street. It's like a 5-minute walk.
The things, I'm a vegetarian, but I hear the things you do with broccoli.
I got you covered.
Are serious. I actually had read that a broccoli dish you created is your favorite sandwich that you've ever created.
I might have said that. I love broccoli. I eat a lot of broccoli.
Yeah.
Yeah, you said in an interview a few years back, I don't know if you were just winging it, that you loved broccoli so much that you decided that more broccoli needed to be in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And that you were going to serve more things with broccoli.
I feel like I think everybody needs more broccoli.
Don't you feel like when people...
the chagrin of George Bush.
Well, no. I feel like when people say they don't like broccoli or cauliflower, and these are foods I got into later in life too. Like, sure. But if someone's like, yeah, I don't like broccoli, I'm sort of like, yeah, grow up, dude.
I kind of feel like, and this is tough with, but I feel that way about all food. Like,
yeah.
The food tastes good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if enough people love something, then you can probably figure out how to love it too. It might take a few times.
Yeah.
But I don't have a ton of patience with my friends saying that when they're being picky about stuff and they're like, oh yeah, I just don't really like that. I'm like, all right. Live your life. That's fine.
Right.
You know, whatever. Tyler, like, you could just eat the damn
you
thing.
You have
by the
no way, food. Tyler
says this in his book. He has a joke about it where he's like, yeah, isn't it weird when chefs say they don't like food? It's like musicians saying they don't like certain notes, which is
yeah,
a really good parallel.
There are some like hated foodstuffs out there and it's weird. But yeah, no, I mean like, no, I think I like, I think I, at this, it's making it actually weirdly harder for me to be a chef because I've become... The more things that I eat and the more I experience and the more I like, just like throughout my career, there have been things where I'm like I don't like green peppers that much. So I like won't eat a green pepper for 4 years and then I'll have one and be like, oh my God, this is so awesome. Particularly probably because I haven't eaten it in so
right.
long and it's like brings back some memories and whatever. Anyway, so the more I eat, the more I realize that I can find a way to love everything, especially again, like if enough people love it, it's probably great, you know, like. People like overcooked chicken on purpose.
Right.
I can do that too. At the Dominican restaurant right by my house, they overcook chicken in like 3 or 4 different ways and they're all totally awesome. And I can get down with that. But it's just about your expectations, I guess. But anyway, so yeah, I like all foods and that makes it tough to be a chef because now I'm like, I don't know what to serve anymore because I think everything tastes great. But people are weird and picky about things and they want
But I wonder
certain
how
things
much
just so and I kinda wanna like screw with that and overcook
yeah.
chicken or like what, you know, I don't know. It's tricky. Or like cook broccoli until it's like mush. Cause that's awesome too. Like, cause people are like, oh, I don't like broccoli. Cause my mom used to overcook it. And I'm like, yeah, but that's delicious too, dude.
Yeah.
Get into it.
That's what I'm saying. Grow up. You know what I made last night? I've been in CSA. I made kohlrabi for the first time.
Kohlrabi is pretty fun.
Yeah.
And like almost broccoli.
Yeah.
I like kohlrabi.
Not bad.
You know, I could see it, and I can only use the reference to music, but how sometimes you can see musicians get more and more involved in music. And like you even said, all foods are notes.
Sure.
And the longer and longer you get into music, a spectrum of notes you didn't even know were there open up, and like all these things you'd love to experiment with. But sometimes when a musician goes down those paths, they find the people they're making music for can no longer, you know... understand what they're doing or
and
have no interest.
It kind of sucks, doesn't it? I mean, like, I don't want to be that chef that's like,
right?
Oh my God, I've embraced.
So
the
is
whole
that
world,
hard
now
to?
Here's my new record.
That's to like, reel yourself
you're
back.
You love it. It's, I love it. I don't care if you love it. It's perfect and beautiful.
Yeah,
and
is it? Comes,
like, I don't want to like. Here's just all the like. I don't know. It's tricky. I want to be discerning because that's what you want to eat, and you want to hear a record by somebody that has a point of view that's like, this is what I'm. This is what this record is about.
Sure.
Not just like, blah, this is, I love all these different things. Let's celebrate them. Like, not that there's anything wrong with that, but like, that's not that exciting.
Right.
And a restaurant should be that. And I feel like I need to like re-find that, you know, the like, no, I have really strong feelings about this, and this.
But
I just kind of love everything now.
I think that's also sort of a part of getting older, though.
Maybe, yeah.
Because I feel like not in a bad way, but I feel like I care about stuff so much less. And now, like, yeah, anything you put in front of me, I'm like, yeah, this is cool.
Yeah.
Like, and whenever people are real picky about stuff, I'm sort of like, is this even really what you think? Or is this like a pattern you're in? Or like, you hate all this stuff? Like, there's no way. Like, you just made, this is just some weird construct.
But I mean, but what's to say? So if I'm going to use a music reference, I'll take like your standard CGE chords as like your AC/DC. Of music is your grilled cheese sandwich
sure.
or food. Just something that is pretty universally
everybody
awesome. Everybody likes it. It's AC/DC. It's rock and roll. Like,
simple.
And if you're going to have a restaurant, maybe some form of AC/DC should be on the menu. What I'm saying, and the thing where I wonder how hard it is to reel in, is that you get deeper and deeper into the world of things you want to experiment, play with, but the people you're often serving food to might not get as advanced or far along with food and their palate and things like that as you would being part of food
maybe,
so long.
Yeah, but I think
so
I'm
are you trying to push the boundaries? Or
I'm
like,
not anymore. I think I'm going in the other direction. Like, I used to be like, screw you. I'm going to take you guys out of your comfort zone and do mm-hmm. these crazy things. And now I feel like everybody's comfort zone, maybe in large part due to the internet and the ability to like, like, if you're food obsessed, now you can learn everything there is to know about the food of the world in its most authentic forms, as opposed to just what I put on a plate in front of you. So, like, I feel like the customer's comfort zone is, like, I can't even touch it anymore.
Mm.
And I'm actually, like, reeling back to I want everything to be simple.
Right.
But from the kind of the customer point of view, I feel like it's led to people being less and less satisfied, which it seems like a bummer, as people get pickier and more specific about things. And maybe like with music, like I don't necessarily love every genre of music, but if your best buddy loves country music and you don't, like that your life's going to be less fun because you're going to be subjected to country music all the time. And maybe it would be more fun if you learned to appreciate it, much like you're out to dinner with me and I want to eat everything on this menu and you're picky, like, and you don't enjoy your dinner because you don't like cauliflower and it was on the plate and they didn't tell you or whatever. Like, isn't life more fun if you actually just like everything? Like, wouldn't it be more fun? Like, at some point,
sure,
then yeah, you're just on drugs, I guess. But
right.
like,
but it's not like someone's putting
it's
like
just
a protractor on your plate. Like, it's food.
Here's a plate of razors.
Right. So wouldn't it be more fun just to like any food that is put in front of you? Because that's kind of in the weird place that I've come to, which is like anything you put in front of me, I'm probably going to be stoked. Especially if like the intentions, if you pulled off what you were trying to do, if you asked me how I wanted my steak cooked and I said medium rare and you brought me a well-done steak, then I'm probably not as thrilled because we talked about it.
Right.
But if you're like, if the chef comes out and it's like, this, you will not believe how good this is going to be. This is how I serve it because it's the best way. I may not totally agree with that, but like that's what you're going for, then yeah, by all means, like give it to me and I'm sure I'm going to love it.
Well, I guess it goes down to what you're into, because the thing you guys are talking about is interesting because I'm the same way. I was an extremely particular eater when I was a kid. There was
And I was too, actually, as a kid.
Very few things.
I was real picky.
That I would try or enjoy. And as the years gone on, especially being a vegetarian for over 20 years, I've opened myself up to tons of different kinds of food, forced myself to like certain kinds of food that I now like. And I'm at the same point as you guys, where I can go to most places and if, you know, barring it's not meat,
yeah,
I'll pretty much try anything you throw in front of my face. I'll be like, all right, give it a shot. Maybe it's good. Maybe it's not as good. But that being said, I am open like that now, but I feel like I'm reverting in the way that is like, all right, I've tried so many different kinds of food now, and I really love these six things, and I want to eat those things as much as I can before I die.
Yeah, that's
instead of like instead of just keeping like expanding my palate and trying all this different shit, I kind of want to maybe just take the six things I'm really excited about and just keep eating those until I die. Is that fair too?
I think that's, I mean, I will say that I'm kind of in a similar place too, where it's like, I don't go to like the exciting new restaurants anymore. That used to be so exciting for me. Now I like everything. Everything tastes good. So I don't necessarily need to go to this crazy fussy place because I'm just as happy eating the beans and rice at the Dominican place around. I love the Dominican rice restaurant around the corner of my house, in case I haven't made that clear. But like, I'm happy to just go get some beans and rice and avocado and eat that. I could eat that for pretty much every meal if it came down to it, because it's so delicious. But yeah, I guess, you know, I don't know. And at the end of the day, none of it matters anyway. Just eat what you want to eat.
Totally. I mean, one thing I really like about the cookbook is, I feel like I don't read a lot of cookbooks. I'm sure not a lot of cookbooks are written in this way, where it's almost like Dave Eggers-y or McSweeney-y type vibe, where it's like really funny and engaging. I mean, was that, and obviously the illustrations are amazing. I mean, was that important to you, not to have it be like a typical like 50 sandwich recipes from Tyler?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because who wants that?
Right.
I guess some people want that. Somebody
but was
wants
it hard to sell this to be like, well, it is a cookbook. I know you want me to do this because But I have this conceptual idea. Yeah.
They were like, let's do the number 7 sub cookbook and your 50 best recipes. You know, like that's what. And then they still turned it down. So, yeah, no. Nobody thought it was a great idea. They thought it was funny enough to like have a meeting about it, but that was about it.
Because I remember we talked a little bit, like, you had told me about this idea, like, years ago. Like,
yeah, I've been weirdly, like, working on this book on and off for, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now.
Hmm.
It took a long time.
And then what was it like sort of getting, because I'm not, like, super familiar with William Wegman, but I have some friends who work in food or, like, know more about fine art and stuff, and they were like, wait, this can't be that guy. And I'm like, no, I think it is. I don't know.
Yeah, he's a big deal. My dad until several years ago, we lived in Ithaca because my dad taught art at Cornell, but in the 70s he taught art at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, and so did William Wegman, and they were buddies, and I kind of called him out of the blue, and I was like, hey, this is weird, and I know you're going to say no, and that's totally fine, but like, would you maybe do like 10 or so pieces of art for this cookbook that I'm working on? And he was like, yeah, that sounds great, let's do it.
Uh-huh.
And I was like,
never know, huh?
Really? Okay. I said I would ask, so I asked.
Yeah, yeah.
He said yes, because it was the what we had spoken about, though, was because he did the like, he did those chapter openers that are like, he took like 70s cookbooks and cut out images and then kind of watercolor painted around them. But those images originally, it was what I had talked to you about originally, which was like friends, like dressing up like broccoli and like punching dogs in the face and stuff. And that was what, like, we had talked about that for a long time. And the publisher and I kept fighting about it because they were all like these kind of random, you know, it was like roast beef and it was like a big, beautiful chunk of roast beef sitting on the floor of a subway car as a stand-in for the boombox for the like Showtime dudes. And then like maybe some friend of mine looking really uncomfortable sitting right in front of it. But anyway, the publisher was like, that's just too weird. It's too random. And
even
I had
though,
a, fun, a bunch
even
of
though
like
they
fun,
knew this was from a famous artist and all these
no,
things.
This,
they
so this
still...
was pre William Wegman.
Oh,
this was just
I see.
What I envisioned.
Okay.
And I had pitched to William Wegman that he do one of those, like that it be like one of his dogs. Because have you looked at his art since? It's
a
like he does
bit.
A lot
it's
of the
mostly,
stuff with Weimaraners.
Yeah,
dressed up like people, and he. I think some of the most famous stuff was in Sesame Street and on Saturday Night Live and stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I had all these like musicians of various degrees of fame that were going to be in these photos too, which was really fun. I was really excited about it. And then they were like, we kept having these arguments about it. We kept having meetings about it. And they'd be like, so we're still not into it. What's, you know, like, what do you think? What else do you want to do? And I kept being adamant about it and being like, you know, it was this like weird situation where it was like, this feels like a movie where I'm trying to be this, like, you hired me to be this weirdo creative dude. And now you're telling me not to do what I want to do because it's too weird. Anyway, so in the end, though, I was like, all right, guys, well, what if I ask William Wegman if he'll just do all of them? There's no way he'll say yes. But if he says yes, can he just do whatever he wants? Because then it'll at least be like the same throughout. And they were like, yeah, sure, go for it. And so then, you know,
and he actually went for it.
He did.
That's great. I saw that actually your father working at University of Wisconsin led to this whole line of questioning I had about cheese curds.
Okay.
But then
I lived there until I was like three. So,
So I was like, man, I love cheese curds. And I'm wondering how you can incorporate these into a sandwich.
Just put them in a sandwich, right?
I mean, but
maybe you fry them first, but
well, you
put
need
them in
to,
a sandwich.
I mean, just cheese curd on bread, a little dry, maybe.
Maybe, sure.
You'd have to juice that up a little bit. Sure. But I did, I read that
Benny loves juicing stuff up.
Oh, you should see. I mean, I was waiting for the opportunity to do this. But can I show you a picture of the sandwich I made just this morning?
Yeah, I would love to see that.
I mean, really quality stuff here. So I'm going to take out a picture.
We'll put a link to this.
Yeah, should we?
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah,
this could be. Yeah. I mean, one second.
This is super exciting for everyone listening.
I mean, it's just this morning.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
What is that? An egg? A fried egg?
Yeah. So,
how'd you get it? So, do you have a little mold for that?
I don't. I'm
nice work, dude.
Wow. Very impressive.
It looks so perfectly formed.
Yeah. So I worked in food service, just not nearly as high end. Uh-huh. I worked as a deli man for a long time. Deli guy, pizza places. And at one of the first delis I worked, I was the flat top grill bitch on Saturday. And I could take up to anywhere from like 10 to 12 sandwich orders at a time.
Where was this, in New Jersey?
It's in Central Jersey. Yeah. So, I mean, just tons of like pork roll, egg and cheese.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a lot of pork roll, huh?
A lot.
Which I had never heard of until, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago.
What is a pork roll?
Well, pork roll, I'm glad you brought it up. It's a very, very New Jersey thing that is absolutely huge.
When's the last time you had it? It's probably been a while since you've been
over
vegetarian.
Over 20 years, huh? Yeah, since I became vegetarian, but I was a huge fan. And I have found things that can mock as vegetarian pork roll. I have found it. But pork roll, it's essentially, it's called Taylor Ham. It's one company that makes it specifically, and the closest thing you could put it to is like a Canadian bacon, I guess.
Yeah, it tastes like bacon, but it looks like
it's circular
and processed and delicious.
It's
salty as hell.
Almost just like a darker bologna, it looks like.
Yeah, totally.
Almost. And then you cook it up, you put the little slits in it so it doesn't get all bubbly and weird. And and a pork roll egg and cheese sandwich is like kind of Jersey staple, like you just grow up eating them. I actually grew up eating a pork roll egg and cheeseburger at a place called Mr. B. So this sandwich you're looking at is a veggie burger with a nice aged cheddar cheese,
mm-hmm,
on a challah roll,
okay,
with mayo, a fried egg, and arugula. Yeah, and it was fucking awesome. I'll tell you what. Like, making it was not nearly as nice as eating it. So I actually made this morning just to make, and I was like, wow, I'm so proud of the way this looks right now that I'd love to show a professional sandwich man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad you did, dude.
Thank you.
But
this all led to my cheese curd thing, which is now a non sequitur since you were three when you moved out of Wisconsin. But your father, being an art professor, I was wondering, like, you know, so much of like food preparation as far as color and spatial relations and all that is like super artistic, or it can be artistic if you choose for it to be artistic, or even the creation of them and the ingredients coming together and the experimentation always feels artistic for me. And some people are the ones who are like, this is the way you do art. And some people are the jazz people who are like, I like to fuck around. And this is. So do you think, like, that connection played an influence in like the way you create food and the way you cook?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, like, I guess I've never thought about that too much because I always felt like I was the least artistic one in my family. My mom is an artist too. She paints, and my is a printmaker, and my sister went to art school. And but yeah, I mean, it's funny too because the notion of like cooking as art is this like weird thing that chefs who take themselves too seriously like to pretend like they don't take themselves too seriously and talk about how it's not an art. But it's this like weird self-deprecating thing where you're like, but you actually secretly are the dude that does believe it's art. And I kind of, and I would like to say that I'll formally say that I do think that there is something beautiful and can be something beautiful and artistic about it if you want there to be. And, but yeah, so I think my father's an artist is like a super minimal, very modern kind of 60s dude. And so I don't know that my food will ever look as like kind of simple and perfect as his art does, but I definitely like have always liked to keep it pretty, I don't know how to describe it. Cause he does these like big white canvases with like just this weird, he'll like get obsessed with a shape and paint it over and over again. But I've always wanted the like the sandwiches at the sandwich shop come just wrapped in white paper and it looks like it could have come from any deli, and then there's broccoli and crazy things inside of it. So I think I guess I've definitely learned some kind of more aesthetic notions from my dad.
Cool.
Makes sense. I mean, one thing I like about the book too is like you make it like nothing super complicated. Like for me, like whenever I look at a recipe and it has more than like six ingredients, I'm like, yeah. I freak out. And like, I was talking to someone, they're like, what's a big deal? I'm like, dude, I just physically don't know where to find stuff in the grocery store. Like, if I'm looking for like coconut milk or something, I'll just be walking around for like, I'm not good at like getting people's attention, asking for, like to me when stuff has a lot of ingredients, it's, or like a lot of special stuff you need to make it.
Yeah, sure.
It makes it harder. I mean, what do you think like this kind of cookbook is maybe more accessible for people, or is that kind of important to you? Because I feel like there's a lot of just dudes like me who are like in their 30s, never really learned how to cook, but are like, I can't afford to eat out all the time either.
I mean, I definitely, yes, I want people to make the food, because it turns out, like when we first opened the restaurant, we got this great write-up in Bon Appetit magazine, and they wanted the recipe for what was at the time by far our most complicated dish, and I was thrilled that they wanted that, because I was like, oh my god, the whole world is going to see how badass I am and how like difficult this is. And it was this fried tofu dish that involved like breading tofu with like three different things, and then making this complicated broth that involved like burning popcorn and caramelizing other things and steeping things, and then you had to pickle another thing, and you had to make noodles, and it was like poach eggs and throw it in at the end, and it was this like super complicated thing, and I was so stoked. And at some point, and it came out, it was awesome. And at some point, like a year or so later, I remember Googling it, and like no one, there were like no review. It wasn't like no one had ever made it, you know, like, and no one probably ever will make it.
So they found it a little too daunting.
And then like the next year, Savour magazine wanted to do something. They were doing a big sandwich issue, and they only wanted the recipe for our pickled blueberries, which was like three ingredients. And I was like, seriously, guys, like we are like the future of, we are like the most cutting edge sandwich shop in the world right now. And we're doing all this crazy stuff, and you're going to write a whole magazine about other sandwich shops and put in like a three sentence recipe from us. And it like totally bummed me out. But at some point I Googled that recipe for something. I was trying to find I needed it for something else. And I looked it up, and like tons of people have made that one. Mm-hmm. And it was so awesome. And so much more gratifying. So with the book, yeah, I wanted to make sure people could make the food. That said, I also wanted to like fill it with distractions of me saying crazy things in the middle of all those instructions. But
yes.
Because that's funny. But I want like the ingredients, like I kept going back through and looking at the ingredients and saying like, well, is this something that, are these things that everybody can get? And if they're not, what and you know, lots of cookbooks have substitution options, but a lot of the times I just straight up, I didn't say like, use this weird lime leaf from Indonesia, or if you don't have that, use some lime zest. I would just take the thing out if I, you know, like I would replace it if I could to make it accessible. And my inclination too with the book was to write like, and then just like, I don't know, season it till it tastes right and cook it until it looks done and whatever. But my editor was really adamant about how much easier it is to use cookbooks for a lot of people when it is really, really specific. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so all of that was like, let's make this so that everybody can do it because that's more fun. It's just, you know, in the end, to see the people like Instagram a photo, it turns out is sure. really fun. And we've gotten a bunch of those. It's great.
That's awesome. Yeah, because I feel like cooking, like I know you've worked in the biz.
And you know, I love to cook now.
You love to cook. Yeah. I'm up to you. But yeah, for someone like me, like cooking is very daunting when you do it. Like, you're like, I have no fucking idea what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But even still now, I just went through this recently for Father's Day, my first Father's Day. I found a great plant-based meat company called No Evil Foods out of North Carolina that make this badass peppered chicken, fake pepper chicken out of plant-based stuff. And it's one of those ones that's really comes in basically like a blob that you can rip apart. So you can cook, turn it into anything. So I wanted to make vegetarian fried chicken, which I've always wanted to master.
Sure.
And I'm looking through recipes. I'm like, oh, I love fucking Popeye's chicken when I was growing up. And I still love Popeye's biscuits. Like, I hope my wife doesn't listen to this one. On occasion, I'll cruise by a Popeye's. I'll just go in. I'll get two biscuits and a small sweet tea. And that is such a pleasure for me. Yep. But I go online. I'm like, oh, fuck, how do you make Popeye's chicken? So I go and I look and it's this crazy old Cajun style recipe of how you do Popeye's. It's many parts. It's tons of shit I don't have. And I was like, nope. I'm like, too much, just too much. And then I found another recipe on PETA.org for like some Southern fried chicken recipe. Like 8 ingredients, super simple process, and is the one I've been making every time. So even for someone who cooks and likes to cook like me, I can definitely say those two things for when I'm Googling a recipe.
Yeah.
Like something that looks simpler than another one I'll usually go to.
Yeah, sure.
And I actually do prefer like 1/4 tablespoon of salt rather than someone going, spice it up.
Right.
Because I'm like, how would you do it? I'm reading this recipe to not do it how I would do it.
Yeah, totally.
I'm doing it to try to do something that you're like an expert on that I'm going to try to mock. And I'm going to get jazzy when I'm just doing my own thing, not looking at your recipe.
Yeah.
So as a layman, cooking layman, I would say that those things definitely draw me to a recipe online.
Yeah, sure.
You asked for my advice at all.
No. But it's valid. And with the book, I tried to keep it. Part of the reason that it's so it's, you know, it's sandwiches and then their components come after. But so you don't have to make every single component. Like the recipe is there for you to be able to make every single thing that you put in that sandwich. But you don't, you know, you can just buy some of the things too and then
right.
still essentially follow the recipe and have an end result that's similar. But also if you don't like cooking that much. You don't gotta cook, dude. We live in New York. There's cheap food everywhere.
Tons of stuff. I know. I just feel it's weird. Like I feel like so I'm in this.
Don't do it for me.
I'm in this CSA now. I've been dating this girl. And
CSAs are pressure. They're great.
It's so it's, much pressure.
It's pressure.
I like it because it's and to be committed 26 weeks.
Uh-huh. Wait, CSA. This is the deliverable recipes and that thing.
No, this is every Saturday from 9 to 12 at McCarran Park. Second time I've done it, you go there. You have to volunteer once during the season, but they basically give you what... There's a farm upstate. I can't remember what it's called. And they give you kind of whatever's in season. We have a vegetable share, a fruit share, and 2 egg shares. And you go between 9 and 12 Saturday, and they say, all right, today you get 3 zucchinis, whatever. Like, I got this kohlrabi. I'm not
Whatever's fresh at the farm.
So, yeah. And then basically you have, like, a week till the next one and the stuff will go bad.
Oh.
So you're sort of like, whenever I go out to eat or get takeout, there's sort of this guilt in the back, like you have all these fresh vegetables in your fridge.
Yeah.
But it also is good because it does sort of force you to make stuff.
Sure.
Yeah. And like vegetables that are good for you.
And vegetables that are good for you. Yes.
So, but I don't like the pressure personally. Like I don't like feeling, especially we live in New York. Like if I want to cook something, I can go to a store. It's, it's a wonderful thing, and I know that this is not the case everywhere in the world, but
you
like
can just go grab ingredients.
I can go, and not just ingredients, like really awesome ingredients.
Yeah,
you know? And so but every once in a while I still will get sucked in. Like I go most Saturdays to the Green Market with my wife, and we always buy too much stuff, and it just stresses me out because then it's like, but I want to eat pizza tonight.
Right.
Yeah, man.
But
this
I have
is
this
go
stuff
bad.
That I feel like I should cook. And as soon as I should cook slash eat something,
you don't want to do
it's like the only thing I don't want to eat. I want everything in the world but that one thing.
I found what you said in that interesting. It's something I want to ask about is how you said you feel lucky for the fact where you live, you could walk out the front door and have access to fresh, organic, probably good foods.
And like, I can afford it.
And you can afford it.
Nice
right.
Too.
And I always notice from the, you know, more foodie community and sometimes the health eating community, I get this sort of snub-nosed attitude that anyone could do what I do. Everyone should eat like this. If you're not, you're dumb, blah, blah, blah. Like, how do you feel about the fact that these foods are generally inaccessible to a great amount of the population? And what are actually, like, do you think there are any, like, real steps that cooks or growers or retailers or all these people can do to make that like type of food more readily available to more normal people?
I mean, the politics of that are tough. I will say that like it is decidedly a privilege for me to be able to that I can afford these things and the fact that they're like within steps of my apartment is a huge, wonderful privilege that I'm totally conscious of. At the same time, you know, there's a McDonald's right down the street and I'm not picketing it because I actually secretly love McDonald's, but also it's so cheap. You can buy so much food for $8. Like it's an unbelievable amount of food and no, it's not good for you, but that is what a lot of people can afford and they don't have time to cook these things. So I would never, you know, I'm not one of those. I'm not. And if you read the book, I'm not preaching about organic food, and I actually don't totally believe in organic anyway, but like I'm not preaching these kind of like you need to eat better food. I guess I do kind of feel like if you can afford it, you should buy the expensive food, because in doing so you're supporting a more ethical system of everything. And I think to the extent that you continue that, like that we who can afford to buy the fancy vegetables, the more we do that, you know, the more that farm can grow, and the more reasonable it might be for it to someday feed everybody at a much more reasonable price. If you can't afford to buy organic fennel, though, don't do it on my account. You know, like that's I wouldn't ever preach that that's an important thing. So, but I do think that gets lost in the conversation with a lot of these chefs and food people who are like, you know, you have to eat the like the most awesome, wonderful ingredients, and like you don't. And it's not that the organic stuff even necessarily tastes that much better, but you do kind of have, again, if you can afford to do that as opposed to buying the cheapo grocery store stuff, then you kind of should, because there's a lot of people who are affected by that. You know, it's not just when you buy McDonald's, it's cheap and it's not great for you, but it's also, you know, that's a big, terrible corporation that probably does some good things, but is also doing plenty of not wonderful things to humanity and to the labor force and to blah, blah, blah. You know, you can go on and on. The people that suffer when you buy cheap things, as opposed to when you buy not across the board. I'm sure plenty of people are ripping you off with expensive things. But in general, when you're buying expensive things, it means that whoever made it is hopefully getting paid more and the ingredients of it are better and blah, blah, blah. So I guess, does that make any sense? Like,
sure.
I buy the nice, I've kind of made a commitment to like, if I'm going to eat meat now, I can afford to buy the grass-fed beef that's not full of hormones and antibiotics. And like, so I should do that. It's better for me, sure, but that's not the only reason. Like, I want to support that business because that's great. But I also get that like, that's totally inaccessible to most people. And so.
Yeah, well, I mean, even just taking your money elsewhere. And I think I see that happening. The only thing that it scares me of is the whole organic craze right now and the way the big companies are jumping on it, where, you know, you go to mainstream supermarkets now and you see ah, these are our organic crackers or whatever. And that you read the back and they're clearly not organic.
Yeah.
It's starting to look to me like the way like diet food looked in like the 80s, where like this came off a good idea.
Sure.
And then once the mainstream got a hold of it, it turned into something that like isn't real anymore. And the whole concept behind organic farming, where something's literally being grown and put on your table the way Jonah has it now, I feel like people are being duped into the fact that they're maybe being healthy as a result.
Yeah. But what's really healthy anyway, right? I mean, a CSA is unhealthy emotionally because you're stressed about your vegetables.
Yeah.
I mean, in fairness, I'm stressed about everything. So it doesn't matter. Someone could be like, you're winning the lottery
At least you're getting fiber in your diet.
Yeah, so like good. I'm going to be late for my daily massage. Like I'm going to be stressed no matter what I'm doing. This is maybe a little bit of a non sequitur. Have you seen that Bobby Flay show, Throwdown?
Is that the one in the studio?
This show encapsulates everything I hate about celebrity chefs and this idea, because the premise of the show, and I feel like I haven't talked about this in a while, is like he goes to someone who's like, your family has cultivated this recipe for like generations. It's the best. Yeah. He's like, give me 2 days. I'm going to try to make it better. We'll have a throwdown, see who wins. It's like, who the fuck do you think you are? And it's like, and then he doesn't even like, yeah, it's like, to me, like these ideas of it's not like an inclusive thing for me. It's like, let me prove I can do this thing better than you or something.
Yeah, that's
weird. I get it's TV. It's like, you need some kind of like something to rally around. But I mean, what do you think as someone who like is like sort of a celebrity chef? I mean, what do you,
I don't know about that.
Well, I don't know. To me, you are.
Thanks, Phil.
What do you think about that culture? Because it is kind of weird. It has become this, like, this sort of thing with, like, I mean, so much money and ego, and everyone has, like, their restaurants and their cookbooks and their, I mean, like, do you feel like anything kind of gets lost when you kind of, like, elevate these people to, like, rock stars? Or do you think it's good?
I mean, I don't know. That happens in every industry to some degree, though, right?
Yeah,
I mean, there's just...
Definitely.
There's the goofballs, and then there's the people who care and are working hard at it, and hopefully those people succeed over the goofballs, but it doesn't always happen that way. I don't know. I mean, like, yeah, that show sounds horrible.
It is horrible.
But, like, I still watch Chopped sometimes.
Yeah.
I would never go on that show. It's unreasonable to be handed, like, 7 crazy disparate ingredients and be given, like, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think it's fun, again, watching it.
Right.
Every time I see it, I'm like, I need a solid just 5 minutes of you guys not talking. Like, all you guys keep talking. Like, turn off the cameras, give me 5 minutes to think about this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then let's go. I'll do it in 30 minutes. That's fine. But I don't think they do that. From my understanding, they just, it's like, they
have you ever asked to
just go. Anyway, but.
Have you ever asked to be on any of those types of shows?
No. But casting agents like contact us sometimes about those shows, but
I could imagine that Top Chef would love to grab you now. They're in like season what, 27?
I don't know how that you have to like audition. I don't have that kind of ego. I just don't have the like stomach for that kind of stuff, I don't think. Like,
yeah.
I would just get too stressed out and feel horrible about everything.
I got a question about your personal favorites.
Okay.
Right? So I'm going to take you to like very specific different kinds of sandwich shops.
Okay.
And I want to know your go-to number one sandwich in these places.
Okay.
All
right. Let's do it.
So you're in Bay Ridge,
mm-hmm.
and you're at a proper old school Italian deli, good fresh bread. They make their mozzarella in house.
Yeah.
What do you get there?
I mean, if they're making the mozzarella, then I would probably want just something like, I spend a lot of time in that book talking about how I don't want to eat meat all the time.
Okay.
But that I still do. And it pains me a little because I know that it's wrong on like multiple levels and I still do it anyway. So,
but that place would have a very nice prosciutto.
Yeah. I'm going to get prosciutto and the mozzarella. I mean, like, because it's in Bay Ridge. It's not like I go there all the time.
Right. It's unique.
Yeah. Okay.
It's unique to get. Okay. So you'd get like a pretty standard, like prosciutto, mozzarella.
Yeah.
Do you go straight oil? Do you go vinegar?
I don't know. I think, again, if it's awesome, if the bread is great, it's great mozzarella. Prosciutto is cured with salt, but it is cured for so long that there's lactic acid in it, like involved in that process. It's fermented, like making a pickle in a way, right? So to me, that's enough acid. I don't need the vinegar
too much.
Okay. I mean, I'm not mad. I love vinegar. I'm not mad about it. But I wouldn't ask for it. I would also, frankly, at this place, and maybe this is going to be a bad answer for all of these, but I would probably be like, what's the thing? Like, what should I eat?
Right. What are you guys?
And then they would make it for me.
All right. Yeah. You have to bail on that attitude for this game.
Okay. Agreed.
Okay. So now you're in Jersey. You're in Central Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And you're at like a good high end cold sandwich Boar's Head type deli.
Maybe a young Benny Horowitz, the next Benny Horowitz behind the counter.
And it would be me behind the counter. Yeah, it would. And I'd be like, yeah, hello. What do you want?
We're talking just straight up Boar's Head Deli.
We're talking good, solid, like Boar's Head Deli with a couple fat guys behind the counter who clearly eat a lot of sandwiches. So you know you can trust it.
Yeah. I would probably go roast beef, and then you would be like, hot or cold? And I would say cold is fine, because I prefer that.
Okay.
With my Boar's Head.
What are you going, like a cheddar with the roast beef?
No, I don't do cheese on my roast beef sandwiches.
Really?
Not on my, on a cold roast beef and hot roast beef, they're two different animals.
We're not talking an au jus here.
But a cold roast beef sandwich, no cheese, because the cheese just makes it, like, I lose the roast beef. So I would probably just go roast beef, red onions, and it's either mayo, or I would ask if you had Russian dressing, and if you did, I would probably ask for that.
Okay, a little Russian, I like that. Okay, now where I don't know where this could be. Maybe we're out in
and salt and pepper. By the way, I'm sorry, because Boar's Head roast beef is just never seasoned enough.
Oh,
I get it. It would be all like cured like ham or something, I guess, if you did that. But it always needs salt.
All right, now you're not far from your place, and you stumble upon a really nice, like, torta place with some good porks and stuff like that. Where are you going for, like, a Mexican or Spanish-style sandwich?
That's tough. I feel like, I think I would probably want that braised pork shoulder, but I would struggle between that and the, like, Milanesa guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like fried things on all of my sandwiches. That would be tough. I would think I would say, let's get two of these and let's go halvesies. And you'd be like, I'm vegetarian. I'd be like, that's cool. I'll eat half of each, and then I'll eat the other halves like 10 minutes later.
Okay. And now we're going back to Bay Ridge.
Okay.
But the nice deli is closed. It's late. It's like 11. Maybe we've had a few limoncellos or something like that. And now we're at like Tony's Pizza.
Yeah.
At like 11:30, you're not feeling a slice, you're feeling a sandwich. Where are you going then?
I don't think I've ever gotten a sandwich at a pizzeria.
No, not like a nice chicken parm, something
like
that.
That's true. I've had a meatball parm from a pizzeria. But I think if it's late and we've been drinking that much limoncello, I would probably at that point ask for a slice not heated up, with like a scoop of the eggplant parm on it that I could fold it up like a sandwich and eat it.
Ooh,
that's nice. Because I like a slice of pizza as my sandwich.
That's really nice.
As the bread of my sandwich.
Nice.
Because I'm an idiot.
I like that. When I used to work at this one pizza place called Paulie's Pizza, I convinced the guy to trust me enough to make me like the counter manager, and he would leave.
Yeah.
And I invented eggplant parm fries, where I would take some of the fried eggplant, a little sauce, put it over fries. I would do a mix of like my own three cheeses on top, bake it in the pizza oven to a nice crisp. Man, it's making me drool just thinking about it.
That sounds delicious.
The kind of fat boy delights I could get into at that place. Like literally, I'd be like, yeah, I feel like a slice. Let me toss in a few mozz sticks just to put on the slice and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, real like, I had a few more pounds in those days, too, so it was dangerous. I couldn't walk by the grated mozzarella bin without just taking a little not sanitary.
I wanted to, before we wrap up, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Whole Foods thing, because that's your...
Yeah.
So right now you have number 7 Greenpoint,
Uh-huh.
Number 7, the Ace Hotel.
Yeah.
Number 7, Sub. Number 7, Fort Greene.
Mm-hmm.
Then you...
There's what? One in the... There's a sandwich shop in the Plaza Hotel.
Okay. Plaza Hotel.
And there's a seasonal one in Dumbo in Brooklyn Bridge Park.
Okay. And when is that... when is that open usually?
That's open spring, summer, fall, but we close it for the winter.
Okay.
But yeah, but we're about to... Next week we open what we're calling number 7 Veggie, which is a vegetarian... It's like veggie burgers and broccoli tacos and vegetarian sandwiches and sweet potato tater tots kind of thing.
That sounds great.
And that's going to be in the new Whole Foods on North 4th and Bedford.
So whenever Whole Foods is open, there'll be someone... Is it someone like who works at the
I think Whole Foods is going to be open like from 8 in the morning until midnight or something. We'll be there from 11 to
gotcha.
8 or 9 or something like that.
Was it more complicated? Like, what are the logistics of doing something like that versus, like, doing your own thing where you're kind of in charge of everything?
Well, they build it, which is nice.
Okay.
Food-wise, we're held to some higher/weird standards with some things. You know, there are certain preservatives. Like, we have to go through every ingredient of every ingredient that we're serving there, and they have these like extensive guidelines about what ingredients can and cannot be used. So that's, you know, a bit of a process because we don't use, you know, we use a bunch of stuff like from Chinatown that has like occasionally a weird preservative in it that cannot appear at Whole Foods. So, you know, we've had to like find some ingredients to swap in for other ones. And it turns out we can't use Heinz ketchup because it has high fructose corn syrup in it. But it turns out Heinz makes one without it, and it's like Heinz organic. Anyway, it's stupid, but we've had to change some things. And but other than that, I don't know. It's just a sandwich shop. It'll just be opening a sandwich shop just at a grocery store. We also don't have to have a cash register, which is nice because we hand them their food and then they go pay at the Whole Foods cash register, which is weirdly awesome.
Yeah.
I'm actually happy to hear about these Whole Foods standards. It makes the whole paychecks thing seem a little more worth it. The fact that they are actually tight what crosses in actually makes me feel better.
I went to
about
Whole Foods.
Spending the money at Whole Foods.
Yeah.
They're super serious about it.
Yeah, they seem very serious. You got to be careful with the... I got Indian food there. And when I was in Columbus working this award show over the weekend, I felt like it wasn't that much food. $18.
Oh, don't go to the way out section unless you want to get trash.
That was my mistake. Yeah. And I knew it and I did it anyways.
That's why I've gotten to the point. I found a route where there's a Trader Joe's on the way to my Whole Foods, and I buy most of my like normal run of the mill stuff that's not fresh produce or something like that at Trader Joe's just to try and save some money because it is rough over there and getting under my budget is a task.
Yeah,
it really is. But I have one more game to play, if you don't mind.
Let's do it.
So I thought it would be fun to take famous bands in history and do a quick Rorschach test with you with a food analogy.
Okay.
So like where, you know, Nickelback would be like, whatever, salami and cheese on white.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Herbie Hancock is some like, you know, Ethiopian dish you eat with your hands or something.
Yeah.
So do you want to play this game?
Yeah.
Jonah, I want you to play
too. I'm nervous.
Okay.
Yeah, Jonah.
Yeah, no, Jonah plays. Jonah plays too, so we can do this. Okay. The Ramones.
I feel like that's just a plain slice, no?
That's where I'm at. Yeah. Slice of pizza, right?
I was thinking hamburger, but slice of pizza also works.
Maybe Coney Island, like a Nathan dog?
Sure.
I could see that.
Okay. Madonna.
Huh. Madonna.
I just keep picturing a food I don't care about.
A well-dressed food I don't want to eat.
Yeah, I'm sure it's good, but doesn't interest me at all.
For some reason, I'm leaning with her towards like an Asian fusion kind of dish.
I was going to say Eggs Benedict. Like it's like, it's fancy, but like you can get it at a diner too. It's always, it has popularity goes up and down.
That's good.
But it's always
doing
around
something.
For long,
yeah.
That's good. All right, Van Halen.
Van Halen. Van Halen to me is like a meatball parm, but with like a ton of pepperoncini on top, you know, that's like the guy at the pizzeria is like, oh, no, you're going to like this. No.
This baby's going to burn. Yeah.
Mine is it has a lot of shredded cheese because there's so much shredding. Sure. Is that Eddie Van Halen?
Yeah.
So you got to have a lot of shredded ingredients.
So just anything shred. So you want something julienne.
Yes.
For
I could also just see like an empty plate with just awesome squiggles of beautiful sauces all over it.
Yeah.
That just looks like an Eddie Van Halen guitar.
Van Halen's guitar.
But, you know.
All right. Kanye.
Kanye.
I would say, I don't know exactly what this is, but it's a food that everyone loves and I just don't get.
Oh. Maybe like a cronut.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a fatty.
Yeah, like people are like something people talk about a lot and they're like, isn't this amazing? And I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna go listen to No Effects.
Maybe like red velvet cake.
Yeah. Anything that's hyped up that people care about that, yeah.
I think the cronut makes sense because I've never actually had one. It might be profound.
But he's more successful than the cronut, I would say. That's why I'm going
red
velvet.
He's more successful than most things.
Yeah.
I mean, he is pretty successful.
Most foods.
All right. Radiohead.
Radiohead. I'm like the one dude in the universe that I'm just not that into it.
I'm not that into it.
Well, then
after they stopped making rock
food,
and roll records and they were like, by the way, we hated making those rock and roll records that you loved so much.
Yeah.
What's a feud that used to be like a nice, good industry standard that's been tamed into something weird you don't even want anymore?
I mean, it would be like if all of a sudden New York City slice joints were like, we only did that because, like, the man made us do that. What we really want to serve is this horrible cheeseburger or something. And then there just weren't slices anymore.
Oh, yeah. So
and then
it's
I felt
like,
weird for, like,
I
still wanting.
Yeah. So it's like de Blasio forced me to use a cornmeal crust.
Yeah.
But I'm just looking to give you a slice of pizza.
Yeah.
Okay. I understand that. All right. The Beatles. I mean, we going straight blood sausage here, just English? Or?
I don't know, just maybe like ham and cheese. I don't know, maybe just something classic.
I would even say like peanut butter and jelly, like something that everybody likes, but there's opinions. There's crunchy versus smooth, and there's different kinds of jelly.
Sure.
Yeah.
Not everybody likes the same Beatles.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
That is true.
That's true. I like that. What about Jay-Z? What are you thinking here? See, I'm thinking like maybe for him, I'm thinking maybe like good fast food. Like he's like a burger and fries to me, but he's like fresh cut fries and like actual like handcrafted burger. So if he's like that guy, maybe he's like In-N-Out or he's like, you know, a Five Guys, like a little bit of a higher end.
Sure.
Yeah, maybe.
Digging on that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say probably something that's a little overrated, but not bad.
Like Chipotle.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Jay-Z's Chipotle.
Yeah, Jay-Z's Chipotle.
Okay.
100%.
And last one, Zepp.
Oof.
What's Led Zeppelin food?
What's Led Zeppelin food? It's like something that's so great, but that maybe you're sick of everybody still always referring to it as the only food that matters to some degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's
got to
be food that's a little heavy. They're a heavy band.
Sure, sure, sure.
Maybe like a steak?
Yeah, is it like a big like fried chicken mashed potato dinner?
Maybe.
Maybe because that makes sense because fried chicken mashed potatoes, it's delicious. It's wonderful. It's heavy.
Can't deny it.
You can't have that all the time.
Yeah.
You can't have it all the
time. But it is the like people obsess about fried chicken.
And every time you're going to have it, you're going to be like, it's fucking dope.
Hey,
it's pretty dope every time.
No arguing with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
But you don't want to, like, you don't want to talk about fried chicken all the time either.
Yeah.
Like, we get it. It's good.
It's great. It's perfect. Let's move on.
Hey. Welcome back.
I wish I'd sat in on that, man.
It was very interesting. And you should
sit in on all these fucking emo podcasts and like finally get something a little bit different.
Yeah, you're always invited, Brad.
Emo and actresses. What the hell?
I know. But yeah, Tyler's cookbook, a super exciting cookbook about sandwiches.
with illustrations by William Wegman is out now. I would highly recommend it. It's a really, really good cookbook. And if you're in New York, check out one of Tyler's restaurants. Number 7 in Greenpoint is great. There's one in the Plaza, Dumbo, Ace Hotel. There's the restaurant in Fort Greene, and there's one in the new Whole Foods in Bedford. My friend Chris manages the one in Greenpoint. He's awesome. So say what's up to him.
It's really family business for you here.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been going there for years.
Do you own stock in this company?
I wish I did, to be totally honest. If I was smarter, I would. Or if I had money, I would definitely invest in Tyler. But yeah, check out his cookbook. Thank you, Tyler, for coming by. Make a delicious sandwich at home. Save some money. I'm talking to whoever's listening to this, not to Tyler. I'm sure Tyler knows how to make sandwiches at home all the time. And also special thanks to Benny for helping host this podcast. We talked about sandwiches a lot. Benny's a sandwich expert, and I should have mentioned him earlier, but I forgot. And he's going to be mad at me. And Benny, I'm sorry. But in case you were wondering who was chiming in, it was Benny. Sorry, it's been a long day. And if you want to support this podcast, go to goingofftrack.com, leave us a donation, tweet at us, Facebook, tell your friends, and support the people we have on here. Buy Benny's Bottom Feeder EP, buy Tyler's cookbook, and thank you for listening. We'll be back next
week. Thank you.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.